So that was one way that I was able to, through my business and the contacts that I made, help the artisans during this pandemic. And also, obviously, I try to do in advance the orders of the year so that they will have some work until the situation stabilizes. So I order a lot. Like I order for the entire year with the hopes that things are going to get better here and I will sell when the time comes.
Valentina moved to Canada from Colombia 11 years ago to study. After her studies and settling into life in Kamloops, Valentina started thinking about the ways where she could take a business on working for herself. A favorite purse of hers from Colombia was getting many compliments as she wandered around here in Canada, and she wondered how she could bring these beautiful products made in Colombia to Canada to support herself and the artisans back home. Welcome to the Safe Haven, a space for stories to be shared about the lights and darks, highs and lows of life. At the end of July, Valentina sat down with me remotely to share her story. This story is so much more than an entrepreneurial journey. After Valentina shares the background behind Indie Arts Collective, we discuss the pandemic situation for her artisans and family in Colombia and how the pandemic is affecting her business and theirs. Valentina has shifted her business and mindset to more of an online presence so that she can continue her sales and continue supporting the artisans in Colombia and Mexico while distributing handmade bags, jewelry, and accessories here in Canada, primarily Vancouver. We started this conversation by me asking her where this beautiful accent comes from.
I am originally from Colombia, from the capital, Bogota.
And how long did you live there before you came to Canada?
I actually was there. I was born there and then I grew up there. I went to high school. And as soon as I turned 18, I moved to BC. So I came to study my university. Mm-hmm. I was just 18. And then ever since then, I've been in BC. And it's been now 11 years later.
Oh my gosh. Why BC?
My brother was here. He was going to university. We were going to Kamloops, mm-hmm. to Thompson Rivers University. And my brother was there. So it just kind of sounded convenient to not to come by my own, but I would have him there.
Yeah. And how long had he been here before you came?
He was already his fourth year when I got here. So basically I got to university, and like a couple of years after he graduated, then he moved away and I stayed on my own.
In Kamloops?
Yeah, in Kamloops.
Oh, and now you're in Vancouver, correct?
Yes. So I came to Kamloops. I was there for about 4 years. I did a bachelor in tourism management and I started a diploma in human resources. Mm. And then I fell in love and I follow somebody, and this person graduated. He was a bit older than me and he got an opportunity in Vancouver. So that's how I decided to move to the city and finish my university in Vancouver as well.
Oh, amazing. I love Vancouver. I've been pulled to BC for so much of my life. And so now to finally be here settling into the mountains feels so special.
Yeah, me too. I love it.
Yeah, it's beautiful, isn't it?
Yeah.
When you and I connected, I had noticed your account on Instagram, the Indie Art Collective. I need you to tell me all about that. How did it start? Why did it start? When did it start? Go for it.
Well, Indie Arts Collective is kind of my baby. I started about 4 years ago. Initially, we started with one of my closest friends. She's also from Colombia. I'm Colombian. and we met at university and we both were kind of thinking, oh, well, we want to have our own business, but we also want to keep connected to our roots and where we came from. And that's how we started the conversation of doing something related to Colombia. And I always liked the handcraft stuff. So I always kind of carry like handcraft stuff and earrings and things that were very Colombian in a way. And I used to have this purse that I always got compliments for. So every place I took it, people were like, oh my God, where do you got that purse? And I was like, yeah, this is handmade in Colombia. At the moment, like, I didn't really knew how special it was. I didn't knew that actually the pattern that was occurring in the purse, that it was actually an embroidery. So I back then, I only bought it because I thought it was cute. I knew it was colorful, it was beautiful, but I didn't know more than that. And then one day I'm chatting with my boyfriend, and I told him like that my friend and I, we wanted to start a business, but we were hoping to, you know, to relate the business with something with Colombia. And he was the one that kind of mentioned that, why wouldn't I try to bring some of the purses, like the one that I have that I always get compliments for. And that's how it started. So I say, well, let's see. So we kind of like very randomly decided to do some research on the purse itself. And I showed it to her. And we did a really small marketing kind of gathering. We asked people what they thought about the purse, and we got some more designs. We also obviously learned a lot more about the product. We realized that it was actually like handmade, like every single piece of it was handmade. And we knew it was a mola, the decoration that it had. And we learned more about it. And the more we learned, the more we realized how special it was. And after some feedback, we asked about 70 people. We did like a focus groups, smallest focus groups, asking about their opinion on certain products that we selected. And we thought that could be an opportunity for us to bring this to Vancouver and kind of like share a bit of the culture and the beauty of these products. And that's how it started.
And so that was about 4 years ago, you said?
Yeah, that was 4 years ago.
Amazing. So do you have a storefront? Is it all online? How do you facilitate your sales?
So until this year, we have primarily sold in big events. So we were doing a lot of like a fall festivals, reggae festival, and a lot of craft shows as well. But obviously this year, everything has changed. With the market cancellation, we have had to find other ways to sell products. We're been focusing more online and to start like generating sales through the website. We always had a website, but like it was used most catalog. Like we didn't really generate many sales. And it was also a way to kind of validate the authenticity and tell the story of the products and be able to have like a place where to put all the information we thought it was important and we wanted customers to know about it. But it was not really a sales channel. Like it didn't have enough traffic. Very few sales were generated since we opened it. But yeah, but we used it mostly when we went to stores because we also have few locations around BC that carry our products. So that was a way that they could learn more about us. But this year we've been really focusing on trying to get those online sales going because opportunities to sell the products are very reduced for us. Mm-hmm. So yeah.
So do you travel back and forth to Colombia to source the products or is it done mostly online to do that as well?
So at the very beginning, I did all the initial conversation and interactions directly. I went and I directly sourced all of the products. I met the makers. I met the artisans that make the products. But then afterwards, I just have the contact of the person that is in charge or directly of the artisan. And I communicate with them through WhatsApp. And my family back in Colombia helps me to do the payments and ship things and select few items, take pictures and things like that.
That's so handy.
Yeah, I cannot imagine doing it without the support of my family down there because it's very difficult like sourcing things, like mostly if you cannot go there all the time. Mm-hmm. Like I do visit them at least once a year, but sometimes it's just hard if you want to create a new product. It's really tough to do so, like, you know, in distance without being able to be there to monitor things and without seeing it, the actual thing. But yeah, even with proportions and everything, it's a little bit difficult to do it over the phone. But yeah, but somehow we're making it work, and I try to go there, like I said, at least once a year. We initially had products only from Colombia, but in the past couple of years, we did a rebranding and we started working with other artisans around South America. And we got some artisans from Mexico and from Guatemala as well.
I really love when people have that entrepreneurial mindset and they figure out how to morph and transform within a business. Because this year, you have had something thrown at you that so many businesses and small businesses have as well, COVID-19. And so as much as every single one of us on the planet is navigating a new way of living right now with COVID-19, when your livelihood is in a small business, how have you found balance in that personally?
I have to say that I'm still finding balance. It's been an interesting year. I don't like to complain because I feel like in Canada, we have had it very, very, very good in comparison to other places. Mostly when I look back to my home country where the pandemic is still growing crazy. Like the numbers are just getting really bad. So I don't like to complain, but I like to think it as a challenge, as an opportunity for looking farther ways to work with your business. Mm-hmm. So in my business in particular, this kind of gave me the opportunity and pushed me to really, really use the online platform to start scaling my business and reaching to other people that were not coming to the markets. Because yes, it is great that I am selling at markets, but it's also limiting my reach potential. So for me, I think that it's been a learning experience. I had to study and learn a lot how to do it better. I decided to also invest in people that know more about digital marketing so that they could support me and help me and give myself the best possible chance to succeed online. Mm-hmm.
What is it that you think you bring to the business that is a huge asset? And what is it do you think that your best friend brings to the business as a huge asset that helps you to balance as a team?
Okay, so here's the thing. We started the business together, but about 2 years ago, she decided to leave the business.
Okay. This is just you now?
It's just me, yeah.
Okay. With some help from your family?
Yeah. Yeah, with some help from my family. And I've been very lucky to get support from other people that know me and they know that I can always use help. Mm-hmm. So actually during the pandemic, I got the support of people that were unemployed because of the situation. And I have a couple people that are helping me, like volunteering to help me.
That's fabulous.
Yeah, and like they work in the industry, so I've been trying to use of that help as much as I can. And I'm super blessed because I had got incredible amount of help from friends and people that I know. Mm-hmm.
No, that's really beautiful. I'm happy to hear that. I'm happy to hear that people have been able to use their volunteer time for a good cause. That's really sweet.
Yeah, like it was, it's really like a heartwarming to me to notice like people, sometimes when the business is not going well, you think maybe people just don't like your products, people don't care, you take it very personal. But then when people start telling you like, hey, I want to help you, it really motivates you to continue because you validate that, yeah, you are doing a good job. Like somebody thinks that it's worth for them to help you. They could volunteer and help anyone else, but they choose to help you. Mm-hmm. So I got blessed with like two people offering me their help. So it's
okay. I think that's amazing. I love hearing that. With the COVID-19 balance that you're establishing as well, what helps you on a really bad day keep the motivation?
Like my motivation is mostly knowing that anything that we do with the business doesn't only benefit me, but there's a lot of families that are making the products that are relying on the income that we help them to generate. So seeing the way that I can support these communities is kind of my motivation in any bad day that I have. And yeah, and actually I do want to tell a story about the pandemic related. Mm-hmm. Like early on March when things were starting to kind of look bad, Colombia actually was forced a lockdown in the entire country, like really lockdown. Like you can only leave the home once a week. Like it's been very, very strict. Obviously, like a lot of my artisans, I know they rely on the day-to-day sale, going to markets and being outside to sell because they don't really have a storefront. Mm-hmm. Although the storefront also have to close. So basically everyone has suffered a lot from the shutdown and the lockdowns. And I was just like, in my own situation, I was like, okay, well, it is tough here for me, but the governmental help is amazing. Like the fact that I can apply to the CERB right now when I need it, it's like, it is a huge help. And I felt, you know what, like I'm not in the best condition, but I'm doing well. Like I can get by with the money that I'm getting from the government until things get back to normal. Because before the pandemic started, I had always worked. Like I was doing the business on the side and I always had a part-time work. And then I got laid off. That's why I applied to the CERB initially. But yeah, anyhow, I was thinking, okay, well, I know that this is definitely going to be a terrible thing for the artisans because there's no way that they can generate any businesses if they can leave their homes. So I connected with them. I started asking them how are they doing, if they had, you know, followed the quarantine and all that. And obviously, like, they were following the quarantine, staying in their rural communities. But that also meant that they couldn't really sell at all. And there was, like, no governmental help at all. Like, there was nothing. So these people, like, I'm talking about 16 families, were that depend on this activity and going out to the market, they were unable to do anything. And this is since March, and it's still on now. They're still in lockdown.
They're still on the lockdown that they can only leave the house once a week.
Yeah. Colombia has the longest quarantine in the world. So imagine that. So you can work. But for those people that they rely on, like, working outside, if you cannot work, you're not getting any support. Your savings are pretty much none. How are you supposed to, like, live? How are you supposed to get by? For, like, March, April, May, June, July, like, it's been, like, 5 months. So it's been really, really, like, yeah, they had it tough. So then I'm like, okay, I have to try to help. And I started on March with a GoFundMe campaign, and I used all my contacts and everyone that I met throughout these years, that they know what I do, that I have contact direct with these communities, and I asked for help. And I also decided to give 20% of all sales towards this fundraising. And in a month and a half, we were able to raise about $2,500.
Wow.
Which is a lot in my country. Like, yeah. It might not sound like a lot here, but it can do a lot. It actually fed, like, these families for months. So that was one way that I was able to, through my business and the contacts that I made, help the artisans during this pandemic. Mm-hmm. And also, obviously, I try to do in advance the orders of the year so that they will have some work until the situation stabilizes. So I order a lot. Like, I order for the entire year with the hopes that things are going to get better here and I will sell when the time comes.
That is so, so humbling and so beautiful, Valentina, that you've put so much heart and so much thought into that and looking after those families. And the GoFundMe, like, that's beautiful.
Thank you, Amanda.
What a thing to do. Yeah, it's amazing. And you're obviously in contact with all of these families. How are they doing?
They're struggling a lot, mostly financially, just to meet their needs. They are so thankful, like, they really appreciate any help they get. Like, when I send them the money, we did two donations. So one was done in 1 month, and then the rest was generated the following month. And they were, like, so thankful. They send me videos of, you know, all the community saying thank you, like, Auntie Valentina, like, you're like an angel to us. You're literally saving us. Like, we don't know what we would have done without your help, basically. So that to me, like, oof. Yeah, it has a very, I cannot describe the feeling.
Yeah, I can understand your emotion in that. That's a lot.
Yeah, so.
How's your family doing?
Oh, my family is good. Yeah, my family, like, nobody's doing great, but yeah, like, in general, like, if I compare to everyone else in the country, they're doing pretty good. They don't have to depend on the government, thankfully, because my mom has a pension. And my dad, he's an entrepreneur, so he's got savings. So although they are financially, they're, like, losing money, a lot of money all the time, like, every month that goes by, because there's just not any help at all. And in their instance, my dad, he has few businesses. He sells shoes and he's got stores. So he had to close the stores and keep paying his employees with no help at all. So yeah, it's been tough, but they're doing good. Like, they're fine. I mean, in comparison to everyone else, they're pretty fine.
Mm-hmm. When you earlier said that the numbers in Colombia are actually still going up, it's hard to comprehend with such a strict lockdown that numbers would be increasing.
Yeah, that's one thing that I think about all the time. And after, like, chatting with my family, because it's different for me to think when I'm not in the situation, when I'm not seeing the day to day, but my family, they are. And the one thing is that although the lockdown is been so strict, and the fines that people will get if they are caught leaving their homes, you know, on the day they're not supposed to, this only applies to people that have money. Because if you don't have money, they cannot take any from you. Mm. And it's a problem that is facing all the developing countries during this pandemic, is that it is very, very much impossible to control population and to ask people to stay at home when they cannot even fulfill their needs. So people are desperate and they're just going out. For them, it's better to take the chance of going out and try to provide something for their families and take the chance to maybe being called by the police and being charged a fine that they're not going to pay because they have no money to pay it, than it is to stay at home and be starving with their families. So it is really complex. It's very, very complex. Yeah, it's hard to imagine, because we're in these countries where there's so much poverty and need. In fact, in Colombia, in particular, I know that over 60% of the population relies on what they call unofficial jobs, which is basically people that are working in jobs that are not going through tax. And these are mostly working outside, like selling things on the streets, in the market stalls. Like, so all these people that cannot work these days, they also don't get any help, because they never pay their taxes. So it's a huge problem when you have 60% of a country that's working in this type of employment.
Yeah.
So it is not, I have to correct, it is not that the government is not providing any help. That's not right. The government is only providing help to people that had paid their taxes, and is based on how much they pay in taxes. And how much they make, basically. But because majority of the people in first place were not paying these taxes, they're not getting any help, because what would the government give them anything if they never pay the government anything from their money they made?
And then the 60% that doesn't have these official jobs clearly aren't paying the taxes, but they're also not even able to do the jobs that they were doing to make money to provide for their families.
Yeah, so they are the ones that are, they're leaving their homes. Even during the quarantine, they're still leaving their homes because they have no choice. So in fact, most of the numbers are growing in slums. The ones that are being more affected is people that are living in poor conditions. Not only because they are the ones that are getting exposed, because they try to leave their homes to try to even, like, rob somebody or, like, steal something from the grocery store. They do anything to get the food they need for the day, right? But it also means that if you live in these communities, they tend to live in very small houses, very close to each other. So it takes for one to get contaminated, for hundreds of them to get contaminated. There's no social distance. There's no space for it. So it's very complex. I would say that's one of the main reasons why the quarantine is not working.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no space.
Yeah, no space. And then the another factor that my mom was explaining is that they're finally starting to do tests. So for the longest time, they were barely making any tests. Yeah, so now they're starting to do more tests. So that will show like a huge increment. In Bogota, where my family lives, for example, they have about 8,000 new cases a day. Mm-hmm. That's a lot. So yeah, it's kind of scary. The situation is kind of scary.
Mm-hmm. What's the infrastructure like there for healthcare and for hospitals looking after sick patients?
It's already gone to its limits. So they are having to start to choose which patient are they going to be taking care of.
Mm-hmm. I've been listening to a lot of podcasts recently just about that and about how there has to be that difficult choice in who's looked after and who's not. And I cannot fathom the emotions wrapped up in both being on the receiving end of that decision and also being the one that has to make those decisions.
Yeah, I cannot even imagine either. It has to be really tough. Like, mm-hmm. I just hope that I never have to experience that in person, you know, like one of my family members. That's the thing I think about every day.
Mm-hmm. And your family, though, so far is everyone's okay?
Yeah, yeah. Good. So far, everyone is okay. But once again, like, because they can afford to stay at home, mm-hmm. that's what it comes down to, mm-hmm. basically.
Yeah. That leads me to wonder how you look after yourself best, because this would be so mentally and emotionally challenging to deal with. How do you reset? How do you find balance and look after yourself through this?
Yeah, it's a great question, Amanda. I would lie if I say that it's easy. It's not. Sometimes it feels a lot because I live in a reality that I feel very blessed. Even when I talk to them, I cannot relate to their problems mm-hmm. because I'm here. But that doesn't mean that I don't acknowledge that it is a problem and that I don't care. But I also know that I need to do the best to try to keep myself good, because if I don't, then who else is going to do it for me? And I started practicing a few things that I noticed that they helped me to feel more grounded and to stop feeling like the anxiety that it takes to have this kind of feeling of being scared for somebody you love. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what I do, I started listening. One of my friends, she's very much into meditation, spirituality. She knew all the situation that I've been facing. And she invited me to follow some guided meditations and to start reading some information that she thought it could help me. And I started doing it. So I started doing a meditation every day. And I found that it helps me a lot to just like disconnect, like feel more grounded, calm down and just be more positive, because it is really tough to put yourself away from somebody else's situation when this somebody else is so close to your heart, mm-hmm. if you know what I mean. Mm-hmm. Like it is like if, I don't know, somebody in your family or somebody you love, you know, they are in a tough situation. Obviously, you're going to worry. Obviously, you will be thinking about them, even if you don't want to. So that's my case.
Yeah, they'd be on your mind all the time.
Yeah, I have nightmares.
Yeah, I bet you do.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's, I'm lost for words. I feel like the same way when I start seeing what's going on in the world, or I'm reading the news, or I'm watching the news, the level of gratitude that I feel for the privilege that I have being where I am, it makes me emotional, because I can't fathom what other people are up against right now, with the underscore just in the world in general, and then with that huge underscore of this COVID-19 pandemic.
Absolutely, absolutely. But I think that people need to hear more often, you know, sometimes, because even for me, because things are so good here, we're not experiencing it directly. We forget about it. And it's no joke. It is a matter. It is happening. It's very real. And sometimes I feel worried to see how we're taking it so, I don't know. We're not taking enough precautions, I feel. sometimes it worries me to hear all these theories that try to deny it, even the pandemic, like, know that the COVID exists and things like that. It blows my mind because I know it does. Like, that we're not experiencing ourselves directly doesn't mean that it doesn't exist.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're definitely seeing that it exists.
Yeah, unfortunately I am. Like, I had a few of my friends that they're sick now. And my little cousin, his girlfriend is positive. So.
And how old is she?
22. Yeah, they live in Mexico though. But yeah, Mexico is as bad, if not worse, than Colombia right now.
Mm-hmm. Whew. Yeah. I guess when it comes to your business and the growth of your business as well, as we've already discussed, that this is such a motivator for you to do as much as you can in this situation, right? To be able to give back and to help out. If anyone listening has the ability to help out, how can they best support you and the artisans that you're working with in Colombia?
There is few ways you can support this. Yeah, if you support my business by purchasing some of our beautiful handmade products, that's a way, because I make sure that 20% of what you pay goes back to the community. If you don't necessarily want to purchase a product, I still have opened the GoFundMe campaign. So you can just donate whatever you can or you feel like it in there. You realize that because we all are struggling right now, there is so many causes. There is so many, we all kind of like very much looking into our problems. I found that it's really hard to get people to help you with any cause. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I was talking with a friend of mine who helped me to distribute the GoFundMe campaign, and he's a person who's done a lot of campaigns. Like he ran like many campaigns before, and he told me that he never seen people less likely to help than now.
Yeah, because everyone needs it themselves, right?
Yeah, because we're all scared. We're all like, oh my God, what about if I lose my job? Like, what about if, you know, pandemic continues? And I get it. Like, we're all kind of really looking after ourselves and people close by. But it's good to know that some more people have it more difficult and they could use this help a lot more than we need it. So that cup of coffee, $5, can actually feed a person for a day. So it can really do a lot. Like anything that you can spare, like it will be directly given to the community, and you can be sure that they're gonna be using it for essential things, to buy food and water, because there's no potable water either, and yeah, just to survive basically.
Mm-hmm. Assuming that this GoFundMe campaign stays open and that there's still money coming in and that it has been successful, will it remain open long term?
That's a great question, Amanda. And I didn't thought of leaving it open because, like I said, it takes a lot of work on my end to promote it. And if it stays open and nobody is donating, like, what's the point? And at the same time, like in the ideal world, I wish to be able to provide more to my artisans, more than just, you know, the transaction of buying the products from them. But that would be a great way to be able to get extra income to give them, you know, like as a bonus per se. But keeping it there without promoting it well and without, yeah, I cannot think of a way how to keep it there and that it still works. Because even now when actually we did it because we really, really need this funding, we haven't generated much. Like, everyone that donated, except from two people, is people I know.
Okay.
Yeah. Only two people were out of my bubble, basically.
I'm curious about this. So if people are able to still purchase through Indie Arts, through your website, right? If the people in the artisans in Colombia are still on lockdown, are they still able to have the materials to produce and to ship and to send to you when your products that you have are sold out? How does that happen now with this?
It takes a lot of communication and logistics. Like I said, people can leave once a week. So we make sure that I plan ahead. That's why I decided to just order for the whole year, because if they're going to be going that day during the week, I want them to get as much as they can to bring back to the community and start making the products. Mm-hmm. So we just kind of plan ahead. I actually, one of my bestseller products is one of these items that is made out of cotton. It's a bag. And right now we got into a location in Granville Island, and they've been selling them a lot. So this is one of the items that this community that we are sending the money to, which is called the Wayuus. Mm-hmm. This is one of the items that they make. So I basically just have to make sure that I keep track of what sells. Mm-hmm. And before it sells out, I am already starting production. Because even production itself takes a couple months for me to get things here. Mm-hmm. And I usually order a lot. So that is worth it for me to take the certain amount of weight and send it here, because there is a minimum that they charge you for for the amount of weight as well. So I need to have at least 30 kilos of products for me to have a good price on shipping cost.
Where do you store it?
I have one little storage room in my apartment building, and I also pay somebody to help me to store a few things, like a locker space as well.
Oh, that's awesome. I love that you're being innovative even with where you have the space and with online sales, because I think that there's so much that happens behind the scenes that we just see it as you just go online and you shop and it's coming to your door, you know, after you buy it. And there's so much more to it than that.
Yeah, it's so interesting. Like, people think that, you know, you just buy and sell, but there is so much work behind all of this. Like, so, like in my case, because we make like handmade products, it's not a machine manufacturing them. It's actual people. Mm-hmm. It takes like a long time. Like to make one product is a matter of at least a week. And then they also, you know, there's so many steps in the process for me to get the product. So they make it in the community. Then they have to ship it to my family or to one of my suppliers in the capital city. And from the capital city, you send it here. But before it gets here, the product has stopped in about 5 or 6 other locations.
That's so much.
Yeah, it is a long process.
I can't wait to see them. I can't wait to like really deep dive into all of the products that are available and just see how even I can support with a purchase. And I also am going to make sure that for anyone listening, that they are able to go onto the Instagram page and just kind of flip through really quickly so that they can see a couple of products. And then I will be able to link your account to the posts, which will be great.
Yay.
Yeah.
That would be awesome. Thank you so much, Amanda. That would be, I think, very helpful.
I do too. Where can people find you on social media?
So we can be found on Instagram as In The Arts Collective. And on Facebook, we are as Colombian In The Arts.
Okay, beautiful.
That's like my issue with social media, because like I said at the beginning, we started with only Colombian products. And I was with my partner, so we were Colombian In The Arts. That was the name. Mm-hmm. And then when I did the rebranding and I started like including other artisans from South America, more like a artisan collective, I wanted to make it more general to like South America. And we changed the name to In The Arts to keep kind of similar, collective. Mm-hmm. But then Facebook doesn't let me change the name.
Oh, I didn't know that.
To my Facebook page. I tried like 100 times and it still denies it.
Gotta love Facebook.
Yeah, I know. So I cannot have the same name in both accounts and it's a bit confusing. But it's the same business. Mm-hmm.
I'll be sure to link all of those at the bottom of the podcast notes as well.
Oh, that would be great. Yeah. So the website is just IndieArtsCollective.com.
So Valentina, I have 3 safe haven style questions for you. You ready?
Yeah, I am.
What are you most proud of?
I'm proud of have been able to follow my dreams and being able to open up my business so young. I opened up my business when I was 26. So becoming a young entrepreneur and see how the business has improved throughout the time. I'm proud that I took that chance. No matter what happens with the business and life, I would be always be proud that I follow my heart and my dream. I move with it. And yeah, so I'm proud of that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you should be. What do you want to be known for?
I would like to be known as a person that cares about people, a bit of a dreamer. I think that generally most people, if not everyone, is good. I just feel that sometimes we just need to listen more and talk less. And then when we have understanding of each other, we start showing more compassion. And I hope that I'm known as a person that shows compassion and I'm care for people.
That's beautiful. If you had a message for everyone listening, what would it be?
Be thankful for what you have. Focus on the good. Focus on the positive. Know that life is not perfect. There's always going to be challenges. But all challenges are there for you to teach you something. Never take anything for granted. And always be grateful with everything you get.
Valentina, thank you so, so much for being a part of the Safe Haven.
Thank you so much, Amanda. I'm so glad that I'm here.
Valentina, thank you so much for your time and for sharing vulnerably with me and my guests. What you're doing for your community is so beautiful. And the way that you lead with your heart, you're destined for success. To everyone listening, I recognize the privilege that comes with my platform, and I am committed to creating a safe, brave, and inclusive space with intention. If this episode has hit you right in the heart or inspired you in any way, please screenshot the screen while you're listening, send it to your friends, and share it in your Instagram stories. Please be sure to tag us so that we can personally thank you for it. If you're able to write a review or leave a juicy 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts, even better. For more great podcasts, check out frequencypodcastnetwork.com, and I will talk to you next week.